If you like weird history, true crime, haunted and paranormal, then pause the podcast you're listening to right now and subscribe to Ghost Town wherever you listen to podcasts. We also have a video component to our favorite Ghost Town episodes at youtube.com/Jason Horton. Episodes like The Los Feliz Murder House, The Toxic Lady, The Black Dahlia, Janis Joplin's Hotel Room, The Haunted Roosevelt Hotel, and more. Just go to youtube.com/Jason Horton. That's youtube.com/JasonHorton. And while you're there, please subscribe so you don't miss any new episodes. Thank you.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hey, you.
Yeah, you.
Nice shirt. Also, do you like podcasts?
Sure you do, which is why you should listen to Ghost Town, our comedy podcast about the abandoned, mysterious, haunted, and unexplored.
From the Berlin Wall to the Los Feliz Murder House to the room that Janis Joplin died in, we'll be there.
If it's cool with our lawyers.
We have lawyers?
Go with it.
Wherever it is, we're going to hash it out and, I don't know, probably solve it.
And we have mugs.
We have mugs?
Go with it.
Ghost Town, a podcast about mysterious, abandoned, unexplored places.
Subscribe to Ghost Town on Apple Podcasts or your favorite podcasting app.
It's the Friends Without Benefits podcast. My name is Jason Horton. Welcome to the show. Today, my guest is Christine Blackburn. That name sounds familiar. She has been on a previous episode, and she's back for round two. You know, sure, you know, she's doing more interesting and exciting things, and I wanted to be updated. She has a long-running podcast called Storyworthy. She has a brand new podcast called Screwed Up Stories. So it's a lot of stories, and I was recently on an episode of Storyworthy again, so I had a round two, so make sure to go check that out. It was really interesting. Something I didn't know before is that Christine was a flight attendant in like the late 80s and into the 90s, which is a very interesting time if you remember flying, you know, I mean, definitely before 9/11, and just the kind of somewhat lax, I mean, not really lax necessarily, but it was just things that, you know, ashtrays in the, you know, armrests, and she talked about having, you know, silverware and glass and all these things that are, you know, I mean, obviously considered dangerous, was part of the experience. And like smoking sections, there'd be the whole plane would, there's no difference really where you're sitting, even though there'd be like a non-smoking section and a smoking section. I mean, the smoke travels. It, I guess, it's just things that I've forgotten about or maybe didn't register because it was normal. So, yeah, so it's very, very interesting. We talk about a lot of stuff. She has a solo show coming up as well, and she talks about being a flight attendant, which I found super interesting and captivating. So I know her solo show is going to be amazing. And speaking of amazing, Robinhood, it's like one of my top apps that I look at. I'm a little bit obsessed. I've mentioned it before. Robinhood is an investing app that lets you buy and sell stocks, ETFs, options, and cryptos, all commission-free. Nice. They strive to make financial services work for everyone, not just the wealthy. Nice. Non-intimidating way for stock market newcomers to invest for the first time with true confidence. I like that. Simple and intuitive, with clear design and data presented in an easy-to-digest way. Very intuitive, which is important to me. I'm not looking to be confused. I'm looking for straightforward, and Robinhood delivers that. No cost, no commission fees. That's amazing. Those can add up. Other brokerages charge up to $10 for every trade, but Robinhood doesn't charge commission fees, trade stocks, and keep all of your profits. I like it. Robinhood also has easy-to-understand charts and market data. Place a trade in just four taps on your smartphone. So easy. And Robinhood is giving listeners a free stock like Apple, Ford, or Sprint to help build your portfolio. Sign up at friends.robinhood.com. That's friends.robinhood.com. Happy New Year, by the way. How's it going so far? I think it's going okay. I guess there's not been enough into the new year for me to make a decision, but I can't complain. I don't know if you're familiar, but I have another show called Ghost Town that I co-host, and that's been a super exciting, time-consuming, but fun, and we are currently on the Apple Podcasts Scary Stories, so that's nice, in really, really good company. And we are working on doing some live shows. You know, I've done Friends Without Benefits live before, and there's been some interest in Ghost Town doing some live performances. So we are currently working on that and other exciting stuff. You can find Ghost Town anywhere you get podcast. The Instagram is Ghost Town Pod, and we have a Patreon. We have bonus episodes every month, and they're really stacking up. So if you can't get enough of haunted, abandoned, true crime, mysterious places, and you want some bonus episodes, that's patreon.com/ghosttownpod. Last night I was at a show at the Forum in LA. It's actually my second time being there. A historical landmark stadium, arena, whatever it is technically, of music going back to the 60s, and I'm infatuated with LA history, and you could might be able to tell by listening to Ghost Town podcast. I keep saying Ghost Town Pod because that is the Instagram, and it's all the things: Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. But Instagram's where all the pictures are, so you know you want to head over there. And I saw the band Ghost previously, but last night I was a guest of the band Disturbed, which is a band which at first was kind of like a guilty pleasure for me, and then became a not so guilty pleasure. And I'm not, you know, their number one fan, but I don't know. I like some of their songs. I don't know. Do I have to apologize for that? But it was super fun. The band has a very cool, inclusive vibe. Everyone seemed to be having a really good time. I got the privilege of getting some access to the whole arena, for the most part, anyway. Got to see what it was like kind of behind, well behind, like the drum kit and the monitors and the guitar techs. And, of course, the Forum Club, which has free food. Let's be real. It was great. I was very excited. But it was cool going down all the hallways of the Forum because it showed photos from all the amazing bands that have played. Everyone has performed there. You know, Led Zeppelin to Lady Gaga, I guess, if I'm picking L's. But if you name them, they're there. I grabbed a picture of Freddie Mercury that was really interesting. He looked a lot like Tim Curry. I thought it was Tim Curry for a second. I was like, that doesn't make any sense. And of course, Bruce Springsteen. And I could theoretically stare at every single photo and see what year they performed. I'm just into that. You know what else I'm into? HelloFresh. HelloFresh is a meal kit delivery service that shops, plans, and delivers step-by-step recipes and pre-measured ingredients so you can just cook, eat, and enjoy. My wife does a lot of the cooking, but sometimes I'm left to my own devices, and HelloFresh, thank you. I made it, and I followed it, and it tasted really good. I was like, did I do that? Did I make that happen? I'm eating by myself, so people are just gonna have to take my word for it. But achieving your 2019 goals is as easy as enjoying delicious home-cooked meals with HelloFresh. Fresh, pre-measured ingredients and easy-to-follow six-step pictured recipe cards are delivered to your door each week in a special insulated box. I like portion. You know what I mean? I like portions. And they're amazing portions that are perfect. And that's helping me stay on track in 2019 and keeping my lifestyle, my fitness, and my weight in check. All meals come together in 30 minutes max, call for less than 2 pots and pans, and require minimal cleanup. I love all of those things. I don't have to spend a lot of time looking for a zillion pots and pans. Well, my wife cooks. That's how she does it. You know, she cooks with about a zillion things. But HelloFresh keeps it nice, minimal, easy, perfect. There's three plans to choose from: classic, veggie, and family, with the option to switch between for when your tastes change. And sometimes they do. Sometimes you want to switch it up. Get out of that recipe rut and start cooking outside of your comfort zone by discovering new, delicious recipes. Take advantage of HelloFresh's special offer for 2019. Get $80 off your first month by going to HelloFresh.com/Friends80 and enter Friends80 in the promo code. That's HelloFresh.com/Friends80 and enter Friends80 in the promo code. All right, let's get into my conversation with Christine Blackman. Communism would be right up your alley.
This is what I'm thinking. You know, I don't need, like Steve Jobs. You know the way he dressed? That's what I'm going to start dressing.
Very, like, minimalist.
Just in cream.
Yeah. Monochromatic, I guess that would be.
Yeah. I'm going to turn this off.
All right, it's cool.
Off. We're going.
We're going. We're in it. We're doing it. So I guess we won't be talking too much about reality TV because we found out that you do not.
But that's
like
kind of
it.
Interesting, and we can talk about that.
Well, because we're going to discuss your new show, but the co-host of your new show, I don't want to spoil it.
Touch on it though.
She's kind of connected to the Vanderpump Rules world of Bravo, whatever. And I'm not a big reality TV person, but I for some reason really like that show. My wife watches all the shows, and Vanderpump Rules is something that we just kind of connected with, I guess maybe because it's a little younger and it takes place in Los Angeles, but your co-host Rachel is in that world, right?
I didn't even know we were recording yet.
Are we?
You're so smooth.
Oh, I'm so smooth.
No, we can be. Yes, we are. Okay,
we're in it. We're in it. You don't know. I could be
magic
at home
trick.
I could be asking you questions and it's not even on, you know, and it's just out there in the ether.
Okay, what was the question?
Well, we're talking about, we were just
Rachel on Vanderpump Rules.
Yeah.
Yes, she's on that show. Yeah. I don't think she's a reoccurring character,
sure,
is what she is. Yeah.
Sure.
And so she doesn't work at the restaurant.
Yeah.
But she's like a friend of somebody in the restaurant.
Yeah.
And several of them slept with the same person.
Yeah.
And she's one of them.
That's the
Jax, bartender.
Yeah.
They all slept with him.
That's the crux of the show.
That's like, the whole show.
That's pretty much it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because when Rebecca was on Screwed Up Stories, she mentioned it, the connection to Vanderpump Rules. So, I guess I made that happen for Rebecca. You know what I mean?
I don't know.
I did that for her. You know,
I see.
Whereas I just want to take credit for things that
nobody
really asked me for, but you know what I mean? I need a win. I guess this is the second time you're a second timer on Friends Without Benefits.
I know we have so no benefits together.
No, I know. And it continues
that it's without.
It's just there's and I, you know, I got to imagine since the first time you've been on, like things have happened. But just to like kind of recap, I know you're from Pennsylvania.
I am. I'm from Pittsburgh.
Mm.
They call that the Ohio Valley.
They also call it something else.
What?
Schittsburg.
That's not true. Do they?
At least one person has. I don't. It's not me. I've never been there.
We used to say, people would say, eat shit, Pitt, for the school.
Right. Right.
The Penn State Pitt was a big like rivalry,
sure,
or something.
Yeah. And Penn State, I mean, is like an amazing school. My brother was going to go there, maybe something to do with wrestling. They have like a big wrestling program.
Happy Valley.
Okay. Is there a documentary on Happy Valley?
Well, yeah, because of the whole Sandusky thing.
Oh,
and also,
that's right.
I mean, it's a whole scandal, and it's really hard to look at that school in any other way.
Yeah.
Plus, one time they highlighted Penn State on NPR, was on This American Life, and it was all about the drinking culture. And like that is how I grew up as well, and I hate that.
Did you grow up with that and hate it, or did you not – that wasn't part of who you are – and that's why you hate it.
Well, I do drink, but I guess I mean like it was just like football.
Yeah.
And, you know, you're a cheerleader and you cheer for him and girls are shit. It was just so much misogyny going on. It really was. And that whole football culture and that there's so much weight on it. And it's like, it's just for what?
I think, I think, I think Poison is from Pittsburgh. I'm not really sure the band Poison.
No, but Wild Cherry was.
Okay.
Or is.
Okay. I know Poison is from Pennsylvania. I just don't know what part.
I see. Maybe Philly.
Maybe. I thought it was Pittsburgh. G-Love.
No, Pittsburgh would be Rusted Root.
Oh, G-Love and Special Sauce.
That's Philly.
That's Philly?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, we won't get into too much Rusted Root. I guess. I don't know the song. What were you like?
They still use that song, Send Me On My Way. Yeah. They still use that in commercials all the time.
I know.
It's unbelievable.
I mean, good for them.
Good for them.
Get that money or whatever it is you're
there
getting.
There are certain songs in life, like in the 60s and 70s, you think back at that era, and they just keep playing those songs.
They use them in a lot of movies now. Like they'll repurpose and like re-edit, like, you know.
Totally. Like a Tarantino movie will all of a sudden, you know, they'll pull up from a song from America.
Yeah.
You know, just totally random, but yet it fits.
Yeah.
It's kind of neat. They kind of are blending cultures and ages. And
no one complains. No one's like, oh, it's an old song. It just works.
It just works. It just works. And also, like, I feel like in the 20s and 30s, I mean, don't all the seniors out there write me at once. But I feel like there was a lot of shit music.
Yeah.
But, like, I grew up in the 70s, and music was pretty good. I mean, there was a lot of yacht rock and stuff, but it was still quality songwriting, just like the films in the 70s.
A lot of punk and
a lot of art.
Yeah,
a lot of culture going on. Right.
When like everyone was like cruising in their like Camaros or whatever.
Pitching Camaro, man.
Yeah, yeah. And little Dead Milkmen. They're from Pennsylvania too. They're from Philly.
There you go.
I think they're from Philly. Dead Milkmen.
Milkmen or Philly.
Philly.
Well, maybe
yeah.
they're even Scranton.
Oh, maybe. Huh. Well, I mean, we got, you know what I mean? We're really dropping the
references.
Pennsylvania is really getting a lot of love right now, but it deserves it. My brother lives right outside of Philly. Lansdowne or
Lancaster,
something like it's something like that. He lives out there.
Yeah.
But when everyone else was like cruising in their Camaros and stuff like that and doing donuts or whatever, what were you doing?
We did a lot of that too because you know there wasn't any coffee shops and stuff back then. So to hang out, we would just meet in a parking lot, like at the swim club or at a movie theater parking lot. And we would just gather in one of our cars and we would drink malt duck. Do you know what that is?
Uh-uh.
It's like a purple beverage. It's like a malt beverage, kind of like a Bartles and James or,
So it's sweet.
It's sweet, right. It's not beer or wine. It's a combination just to get you sick. I mean, it's just disgusting. And Riuniti wine, in the tag was Riuniti on ice.
Yeah, I remember that.
Tastes nice. Yeah. Something really bad. And we would just hang and we would drive, you know, drunk or just meet in a parking lot, smoke
Nobody's
weed.
Wearing seatbelts.
Nobody's. There are no seatbelts. Yeah. I don't even know if there are seatbelts. Yeah, I mean, I don't remember ever driving drunk, actually, when I was a teenager. But it was more, and in fact, I don't remember really getting drunk as a teenager. We would just have a beer, like a warm Stroh's, and you'd pass it around. And it tasted horrible, but it was just the idea of it was like a conversation piece. Same with smoking pot. It was just a reason to hang. And I wasn't, for a while there, until I was about 15, I was doing like the cheerleader thing and the student council thing and the talent show thing. But then at 15, my dad left the family and then everything changed. Then I became a stoner, quit all those other activities and then skipped a lot of school and drank a lot of malt duck.
Right. So at 15, it all kind of...
It all came crumbling down. Yeah.
It all kind of brought you to here right now.
Exactly. And it actually, kind of made me grow up pretty quick.
And when did you, this is just a, you know, because you listen to that first episode, you're going to get a little more deep dive, but when did you come, Pittsburgh, where was your next stop?
So, you know, I lived in Pittsburgh. I went to college there and I graduated and I didn't really know what I wanted to do with my life. So I was just waitressing at a restaurant and then I saw an ad to become a potential flight attendant and I went to the open house. And in fact, I got chosen to be, you know, in the training program. So I went through the seven weeks of training and then I became a flight attendant. So at that point, I still was based in, actually, I was based in D.C. for a while in Baltimore and then I was based in Pittsburgh. But I ended up being a flight attendant for 7 years.
For who?
For U.S. Air.
U.S. Air, okay.
And then it turned into U.S. Airways. And, you know, they were accruing all sorts of airlines back then.
When you were on there, when you were...
There was smoking. There was still ashtrays.
Okay.
Yep. In fact, you could tell an old airplane now. If you look up and you see the call light has a girl in a dress.
Yeah, then you know it's...
That's an old plane. Or if you see the ashtray in the arm of the chair.
Was there anything that you remember from being a flight attendant that, like, this would, beside, like, obviously, like, smoking, anything that would definitely not pass?
Tons of things. It's so funny. And I was telling you, I'm doing this solo show at the Whitefire Theater in February, Surviving the Ride. And in the show, I do 5 stories about being a flight attendant. And there are so many interesting stories. Some of the things that are different are, we always had a cockpit key, and we could just open the cockpit anytime we wanted and go up into the cockpit. I feel like
that happens in a lot of movies too.
But always the cockpit door was like paper thin. I mean, it was always like less than a bathroom door, like less than a door that slides into the wall, like just like a really flimsy, ridiculous door. So that was very different. And we always had a lot of glassware back then. We had a lot of glassware, not only in first class, but in coach. We had a lot of real silverware. We had a lot of weight on the plane. They'd taken all the weight off. So we used to have a lot of magazines, pillows, blankets, all those things added weight to the aircraft. Like all the little mini bottles were glass. Now they're all plastic. So everything has gotten lighter. They've taken off soaps off the plane. Now they have a liquid dispenser. So everything is about dropping weight because of the fuel costs.
So it's not necessarily to be cheap. It's
for fuel costs because the heavier the plane, the more fuel.
But not cheap for the sake of like, we want to use plastic because we're cheap for the bottles. It was really a bigger picture.
But it was also 9/11 changed so many things, right? So the security, of course, has changed dramatically, but also, you know, knives in the cabin. We had steak knives in first class. Yeah. We had real corkscrews. We had, you know, it was just a different environment altogether. I mean, when I was a flight attendant, we used to do, I swear to God, a hot breakfast from Pitt to Philly. That's like a 43-minute flight, and we would be slinging out hot meals. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Pancakes or eggs, chicken or beef. When we would do level 1 service, which means across the country, so say from Philly to LA, we would do like 9 services. The first service would be on the ground before you even took off. We would go through the cabin, coach, with little plastic boxes, plastic cups of either orange juice or champagne. And you'd say, orange juice, champagne. So that would be like the first pass through the cabin. Then we'd do like the beverage pass. Then we would do, you know, a meal pass. Then we would do another beverage. At the end of the thing, we would do mints and hot towels. At one point, during this level 1 service, we would do ice cream sandwiches.
Oh, wow.
I know. That's was unbelievable.
When you fly now, do you like, does it kind of resonate with you to watch kind of like the other, you know, flight attendants now and compare to then, or you just kind
sometimes, of? Sometimes I do, because it makes me laugh. Like for number one, it seems much more casual now. Like when I was a flight attendant, we had to wear high heels at all times. Unless we were over 10,000 feet, then we could slip on our Navy flats. You know, the uniforms could not have been more unflattering when I was a flight attendant in the late 80s and 90s. You know, you always had to button up your collar with this stupid tag or this big crazy bow, and a lot of mauve clothes and name tags. And it was just, so now flight attendants look a little more hip. They look a little more relaxed, taking the job for what it is, which is really a blue collar job based in service, like a waitress in the sky, really. But one of the things that I really notice and makes me laugh is the difference in the way money is handled. Now on airplanes, there's no more cash. Everything's by card. When I was a flight attendant, it was all cash. So if you were working on a trip for 3 or 4 days and you were flying in the C position or whatever, and you were in charge of all the liquor and the headset money, you could be walking around with $4,000, $5,000 in your bag.
So they're going to cash that out at some point?
You got to tune it into the safe, but only in certain cities along the way. And anyway, the point is there was a lot of theft going on when I was a flight attendant. Like they say, there's a guy down in Marina Del Rey who owns a boat that he calls Headsets. I don't know if that's true.
Oh, conspiracy.
But there was, now I can imagine they're saving a lot more money by no cash, no more cash on the plane.
When you did it overall, did you enjoy doing it?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, man. I was young. I was 23, 24. You know, I was in my 20s and had a lot of boyfriends in different places and went all over the world. And I you know, on my time off, I mean, you know, like I backpacked across Europe and across Thailand, across Australia, and, you know, just traveled extensively. And, yeah, it was a good time.
What made you get out of it?
Well, it's repetitive and it's boring. and you can't get ahead because it's based on seniority. So you can be the worst flight attendant in the world, but you're more important to the company than I am because you have a day more seniority. And I can be the best flight attendant in the world, and it really doesn't matter.
Yeah.
So it's just really, it's your cattle. Like, we didn't even have, when you were called by scheduling, it was just like, and by the way, I had a beeper back then. I had a beeper the whole 7 years I was there. I never had a schedule. So your beeper would go, 1 minute you're going to a football game, and then you're going to Buffalo, you know, or 1 minute you're on your way to a you know, your family function, and then, no, you're going to Santa Fe. What was I going to tell you? I forget what I was just going to tell you.
So from there, like, what was
your... Oh, I was going to say that there's no way to get ahead. So it was just, it's repetitive. It's customer service. It's just like waitressing, really, but you're in the sky. And now it must be easier in some ways because there are less amenities. And I think they're treated with, flight attendants are treated with more respect. But also, it would be easier because there's cell phones and there's things to do, you know. And when I was a flight attendant, we would be running off the plane every time we landed to get to a payphone, so we could, you know, dial in our huge code to make a call. You know, I was reading. I remember reading like 2 novels a week because I could. There was nothing to do but read, you know. And so now I imagine it's very different.
You don't need to read.
Yeah, really, nobody reads.
No more books. Get out of here with the books.
So boring.
What was your next step from...
So then I decided, actually, I had a near miss, an engine blowout kind of situation. And that, in part with what I was just telling you about customer service and how boring it got, I decided to leave I decided I didn't want to be a flight attendant anymore. And I applied for the Peace Corps because the Peace Corps, I could, like, you know, actually give back and do something that might be meaningful. Plus, I could kind of move out of the States and go somewhere and kind of take a break in a way.
It's like, probably more enriching.
I wanted to play like guitar. I wanted to come back after 2 years like Melissa Etheridge. Like, I just wanted to like kind of get away, get a lot of sleep. I had been dating a lot and traveling a lot, and I just needed to slow it all down. And I thought, you know, if I go live somewhere else, then, you know, I could help out other folks.
Sure, and change up your...
Change it up, man. I applied, you know, but it took like a year to get accepted. It's very, it's a very long process to get into the Peace Corps. I'm sure it still is because they're sending you away for 27 months. They need to know who you are. Yeah. So it's quite lengthy, the application process. I remember at one point I got nominated and I had a meeting and it was in the World Trade Center and they were only on like the 9th floor, quite a low floor for that building.
Yeah.
And I remember being in the World Trade Center and looking up at the restaurant. Remember the restaurant was called Top of the World?
Oh, yeah. I mean, of course, yeah.
Yeah, and I remember thinking like, oh, someday, man, I want to eat up there. Like, yeah. that would be the shit.
Yeah. So, like, let's just, we'll cut to Storyworthy, which you're still doing.
Yeah.
And, you know, podcasting, obviously, even since we've last talked, has grown and changed.
It changes every day, man.
And when you started Storyworthy, we were kind of discussing kind of off the record that there was less podcast to compete with in general, right?
Yeah, there was WTF, of course, yeah. Mark Maron. There was Adam Carolla. There was a lot of shows, but not that many. I mean, I remember routinely getting in the top 10 because the field was just smaller.
And with that, did you kind of see the fact, did you think that you were like... all these other shows would, like, podcasting would become what it is now?
No way. I had no idea it would be this
because
crazy.
It's almost like, you know, radio goes to MTV and then, yeah, you know, then there's
like progression.
And then everything's like video, but it seems like, you know, things like, you know, Sirius XM and radio and, you know, obviously podcasting and like listening is so vibrant. So it's almost kind of come all the way back around,
yeah,
and anyone can do it, which is great. But
there's
how do
a purity
you,
to yeah. it, you know? Yeah.
So, and you've been doing it for...
Eight and a half years. July, I started in April 2010. So that's almost 9 years. It's almost 9 years, Jason.
There's had to have been times, just like anything, where you're just like, should I keep doing this?
I do. It happens all the time.
Yeah.
Sucks.
And what, because I'm, you know, probably people... you know, there's not a lot of people who have had a podcast for 8 or 9 years.
It's not possible. Statistically, it's 90% of podcasts stop within the first 3 shows.
Yeah.
When people ask me about podcasting, I always tell them, I think this is great. Good for you. All your ideas are perfect. Good for you. Just start writing it all down. and record five shows.
And you'll already be...
And then start dropping them. But don't drop anything until you have five in the bank. Because you got to get a flow to whether you even enjoy it.
Yeah.
A lot of people blow their wad like in one or two shows because they're excited. And they need to, set a time limit on yourself. Give yourself a syllabus, as it were, like a timeline or a structure. And a template. And then go for that and decide, is it 30 minutes, is it 45, whatever. And then stick to that for five shows. And if you can do that, you have a good chance of, making it to 10 shows.
I think there's also a statistic that I don't know if it's like 85% of shows like get less than 150 downloads per episode.
Nuh-uh.
Because the thing is, I think that top 10 or 15% is still like a huge gap, between number one and there. So I think, cause there's so many shows that, only put, like you said, put out a couple episodes, or they put things out and they have no, you're just posting on Facebook or whatever. Unfortunately, there's just so many shows.
It's like, they don't die. Yeah.
Yeah. What's like, I guess, changed from from when you started podcasting, the way you do it as time has gone on, like, has there been any kind of like huge shift in what you've done? Or
not so much as what I've done, but I've seen a lot of shifts in podcasts in general. Obviously the true crime thing, is out of control, as you know. And also people are bundling their shows like in series. So they're deciding, okay, we're going to do this 10-part series on Charles Manson, or this 10-part series on, one subject, Vietnam or whatever. So it's almost like bits of documentaries. It's almost more like programming for Netflix. So that's very interesting. I don't do that, but I know that that's an interesting way that things have changed. Also, of course, you've got a lot of more famous people who've just jumped on board. You know why? Because they can. So Katie Couric has a show, and Anna Faris has a show, and Alec Baldwin has a show. And guess what? They're all pretty damn good.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, honestly, all that programming is pretty good. And I think part of that is because they've got people working for them that understand brevity. They understand how to produce. They understand post-production and pre-production. Because there's a lot that goes into every show if you're not prepared. I mean, if you're not prepared, it's just not going to... If you're not the quarterback of the show, then there is no quarterback of the show. Does that make sense?
Yeah. No, I think it's like people like yourself have like probably paved the way for a lot of other people to, because there had to be, since you were like one of a few shows back then, somebody at some point had to listen to Storyworthy to be like, what's the deal? How does this go? Oh, I like story. Storytelling
Maybe.
Is such a...
I don't know. I still hear a lot of podcasts out there that are just, in my opinion, like screwing up big time. But they just ramble and it goes on. And it's like, then they'll say things literally like, so what else do you want to talk about?
Yeah.
And it's like, again, is there a quarterback on that show, or is there anybody in charge?
I think it's because, you sit around with people and you're like, this would be so, this should be a TV show. This should be a podcast. And it's only because you assume that everyone else is going to enjoy your inside, jokes or, your inside baseball about what you're talking about. And you got to have to kind of try to speak to almost everybody.
It's my worst story when people bring a true story to my show. I tell them any true story, and I just want to know the topic. And I say yes to everything because everybody has their own story and their own way to tell it. But my least favorite story people bring to the table, and I often dissuade them, is a drug story about being on drugs or about partying with their friends. Because you know what, Jason? You really needed to be there.
Yeah.
I don't believe
how he was. Oh, he was acting so crazy. Yeah.
I'm not interested.
I mean, unless you ran into, like, Obama when you were on drugs.
But that's a different story.
Right,
yeah. That's a different story.
Sure, yeah. It's the time I met Obama.
It also really depends on what you want to get out of podcasting. There's nothing wrong with just wanting to hang in your basement and make a podcast and jerk around with your friends, whatever, like you might do a YouTube video or any other medium. But if you want to make money at podcasting, or you actually want to create something that's going to have some legs and going to last, then you do need to think about it before you ever start putting them out there.
Have you ever like done anything like switched a gear that you found like helped?
No, I've made a lot of mistakes. I've made so many mistakes, and I guess those are learning points. One, for instance, in 2014, I decided that my dad had died, and I was just in a, it was a bad space, and I just wanted to amp up everything. And so my head said this, and these aren't the exact numbers, but let's go with this. I said to myself, I'm getting 10,000 downloads a week. How can I get 20,000 downloads a week? And then I thought, well, wait a minute. Adam Carolla records 5 days a week. Marc Maron records twice a week. Howard Stern, 3 days a week. These are my heroes. Well, I can't get those numbers because I'm only one day a week. I'm going to do 2 shows a week, and I committed. I think it was an 8-month period. I said to myself, I will do 2 shows a week. So not 4 shows a month. I will do 8 shows a month for like the 8-month period. And what do you think happened?
Well, we had a discussion, so I know.
Oh, you know what happened.
I know what happened.
Yeah, it backfired.
Well, I've heard that. Yeah, I've heard both. I mean, I've heard obviously both sides of the thing. Now, were they both those episodes the same format, same amount of time?
Same everything, okay. But I was giving people a choice of what story and what person they wanted to hear. I wasn't able to get another hour of their life. I'm not big enough, or I'm not good enough, or I'm not exactly sure why, but I couldn't just say, give me 1 more hour of your life. So that didn't work. And I went back to 1 a week and, you know, spacing them out and letting it breathe a little bit and realizing that people have a queue of stuff to watch. So like me and my daughter love to watch The Goldbergs. If it was on twice a week, yes, we would watch it twice a week. 3 times a week, maybe not. So it just depends.
Ghost Town right now.
Yes.
For at least this month, we are doing like a listener suggestion show on Fridays, but there are mini episodes, so they're, you know, they maybe 10-15 minutes, real short, and it has, so far it's proven they're getting the same numbers as we did some in December, which were Christmas related, so they definitely did well because I think they were Christmas related and around that time. I don't know if that's necessarily sustainable. We're just trying it for January just for the heck of it, but I think it's because it's kind of subject. So it would be like this place and then this place. And some people, when it comes to like true crime or like abandoned or haunted, they're like, yeah, I just want as much of that as possible. Maybe not from us necessarily, but I think in general.
Yeah.
So we're trying it for January.
It's great to have those choices.
And plus it's not the commitment of, listen, if we make a 10-15 minute episode and it doesn't do well, it's not a huge loss.
Right,
we're not doing like a ton of research on it as we would do like one of the main episodes, which is more a little more premium, I guess. Although I find that, you know, some of these little ones are also really super interesting because, you know, it's something that's a little bit regional or something. So, I mean, that, because the thing is, it's like 2 a week is good, but it's like, is it like, because it's possibly searchable for 2 a week if somebody, but that's not how it really works.
I'm really not sure. So I feel like 1 a week is effective. And what I did was I started a whole nother podcast. So now I'm essentially on twice a week anyway.
So we're talking about Screwed Up Stories.
Screwed Up Stories. Yeah. With Rachel O'Brien, who you mentioned.
Yes.
And that podcast is on Westwood One podcast. And it's mainly female based. The idea is different generations of women coming together and sharing their screwed up stories. And surprise, surprise, we have a lot in common.
Were you surprised at that? Did you know going into it?
In a way, I am surprised because, like, for instance, this show hasn't aired yet, but we've got artist Aleka Corwin coming in, and her topic is sleeping with multiple people, or what is it? It's having multiple partners. She has slept with over 100 guys. She's 70.
Wow.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so it's just fascinating, no matter how old you are, 20, 30, 40, 50, 60, whatever age you are, there's a lot of common themes. Screwing up with men is a big one. But there's also health-related issues, food-related issues, family-related issues, siblings, you know, children, motherhood, those sorts of things too. So it's not just sex and love, but it mostly is.
The things that we screw up the most are usually...
Yeah, like some of the topics have been a spontaneous sexual weekend, my affair with a pizza guy, sleeping with 2 guys at the same time. I mean, so there's definitely a theme there. But it's empowering. It's like the Me Too movement, and women are saying, you know what? Yeah, I screwed up, but it's all right. Like this girl was on the other day, Rebecca Lieb, sleeping with her college professor. And
she's also the co-host of Ghost Town.
Yeah.
We probably won't be bringing it up on Ghost Town, so make sure you listen to this on Screwed Up Stories.
Yeah. And you know, it's a good story. It's a sad story to me because she was only 18 and clearly being taken advantage of. But again, I had, you know, here's Rebecca 20 years younger than me. And when I was in college, I was 19 and I met a guy 31 and he swept me off my feet and married me, then got another girl pregnant while we were married. Yeah. So it's, I was like seeing the parallel in my life. And here we have a girl 20 years younger than me going through kind of, she went through the same thing.
I mean, guys are crappy no matter what generation
Thanks,
you're
Jason.
In, right?
As this is what I'm trying to say. Yeah. No, listen, there's some success stories too, really. Yeah. There are some, I have none come to mind, but I know that there are.
Well, the show is still young. You know what I mean?
It is called Screwed Up Stories. Yeah. It's not called I Found My Bliss.
Can you have a screwed up story that's like, but because of this huge screw up, I ended up on top in some way?
Listen, man, I swear to God, every screw up in life, and I've been through a lot of tragedy in my life. I've been through a lot of things that did not go as planned, like everybody. And they all do. Change does seem to bring the best at the end of the day. It's hard to sometimes feel it at first, but something happens. Like I'm a cancer survivor. That was horrible, but you know what? I'm in Los Angeles now. You know, maybe that wouldn't have happened had I not had that scare. So I'm just saying, everything happens for a reason. And so all these screw-ups, it comes down to a body of our work, right? Our body of our life. If you lived to 85, you say, oh yeah, I remember when I did this thing for 2 years, you know what I mean? I'm in my early 20s, I slept with that girl, I did that thing, you know, whatever. And now you're 85 and, you know,
yeah,
it's part of your history.
I don't know what that thing is, though.
I'm trying
what is
to
that
think
thing?
I
what
know
is
that
thing?
Well.
Oh, I don't know. That thing is probably something with me wearing socks. I would imagine it's probably something with me wearing socks. Do you think that the, you know, I'll say the, it's not the advent of it, but the impact that social media has brings these generations together a little bit more?
Yeah, definitely.
Or,
don't
yeah,
you?
Yeah. I mean, I think it definitely, it definitely does, because people are, you know, voicing themselves and it's like, hey, we have this in common. Sometimes it's like you really sound your generation like through a megaphone
sometimes.
But I was thinking through your show, do you find that because of that, like if you did this show in the 90s, would it be the connection between the generations be a little bit different?
Probably, because I think it's getting more is it the word monogamous? No, I think it's misogyn. What's not misogyn? The word, I feel like I'm in my 50s, yeah. But I have a lot in common with people in my 30s. It's not like when I was in my 30s, I saw people in their 50s and I thought, you know, they're so old, you know, or something. And I feel like it's different. I think that social media brought a lot of us together in that way, because it kind of crosses over the seeing somebody face to face that is a different age. So now it's more in our words and in the way we receive the messages.
Because you really, a live show, your Storyworthy live show, it was called Shotgun Story?
Story Smash.
Story
Smash. I
have
a game show called Story Smash.
So you know, stories are forever and universal, and everyone, like, tell me a story. I want to hear a story. And that's like the kind of bottom line of it.
It's my brand, man.
Yeah. have the stories really changed? Have stories changed?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah?
I do. I think so. People are more willing to talk about stuff.
Well,
before.
So that's what I was, because, you know, before it's like, always put on your best face. And there's a lot of that on social
Especially
media.
Especially for women. Are you kidding?
Don't admit that you...
You couldn't say you were raped.
You
wouldn't
right.
say that your husband cheated on you. You wouldn't say these things. You were too embarrassed. You wouldn't say that your child was pregnant. You'd send her away to a camp for 6 months. You know, I'm just saying, like, people didn't talk about it. It's everything has changed.
And now it seems like there's, you know, with things like shows like The Moth or Mortified is another show. I feel like that there's, I'm not saying that, you know, people love talking about their misery, but there's something to be celebrated about admitting or sharing, like, hey, you know, like, I screwed up.
I think so.
You know,
everybody has a story, and nobody's life is perfect. You know, even the people you see, celebrities, and you think they have this going or that going, it's ridiculous. What are you talking about? They're just regular human people, human beings that want, you know, not Trump. I'm not saying that person, but everybody else in the world seems to have a bit of decorum and a bit of, you know, sensitivity to be kind to one another. And we all put our pants on and all, you know. Most of us put
our pants. Our pants are on right now, just in case anyone's
was wondering.
Pants are on. You know what I mean?
Pants off podcasting. That's what I'm saying.
Keep it professional.
Yeah.
So you're also doing this is not your first solo show.
This is not my first solo show, but it is a really big deal for me because it's called Surviving the Ride. I've been doing it for about 6 months, but I've got this big show coming up. So I've kind of polished it. Because, you know, you do this kind of solo show. It's not the best thing going out of the gate. It takes time. Do you know what I mean? You can't, you have to have feedback. You have to have, you change things. You make, you manipulate things and turn it around and cut and make it as best it can be. I think the first run of the show was like an hour 25, like way too long. So now it's an hour 10.
And that makes all the difference in that.
It makes a big difference. And like, at least for me, like I'm talking about a lot of tragedy, but it's all in an upbeat way. And it's all of interest. And I never, you know, I really pay mind and pay attention to what the audience is doing. Because if I think people are bored, there's going to be changes. Like, I'm not going to possibly let anybody look down at their phone or want to take their eyes off
what
I'm saying.
Now, do you base that? Because, you know, I've been doing stand-up. And like, if a joke, generally speaking, always hits, I'm like, ooh, keep it. And if I do one,
definitely.
Sometimes if you do something once, it really might be like people just are not interested. It might be a good thing. How many times would you test something to decide whether to keep it? Is it just one time you see somebody looking down, you're like, I'm taking it out? Or
This show is like two times and it's
okay,
out.
So that's enough for, yeah.
Yeah, so I had this particular show, I had been doing stuff about my childhood and my dad and stuff, and I cut it all out. Even though they're good stories, you have to cut your babies, even though, is it something like that? Cut your babies.
Yeah.
But even though they're good stories, it didn't fit for this show. So this show called Surviving the Ride is just about, you know, going through my life as a flight attendant, going through my life in the Peace Corps. And then I did get a very serious illness and I survived it and got out to Los Angeles. So it's kind of like, it's like surviving, failing, up and down. But ultimately, you just keep going. I don't know how it all works, but you just do and you survive the ride.
You know, because I imagine there's going to be people that like can both relate and not relate. But the fact that they can't relate, that's like, oh, I've never like it's behind the
interest.
Curtain.
It's of interest.
I mean, the flight attendant stories are super interesting to me.
Super
I would love, especially back then, like what the culture was. Or
amazing.
You even, you know, talking about having like, you know, a big wad of cash. It just seems so archaic. But I remember being on a plane and then there being, I was very young, but, you know, with an ashtray in the armrest.
We would have like a row. Let's say there were 32 rows on the plane, like on an MD-80 or something. With the rows 1 through 6 would be smoking, and then 6 through 8 non-smoking, and then 8 through 24 smoking, and then whatever. It would be like there was no discerning where you could smoke and where you couldn't. It was so stupid.
What is it? Does it really matter where you sit
of
at that
course
point?
Of it wouldn't matter. No, it would never matter. But that's the way it was. So we didn't think anything of it. And then actually, they stopped smoking, I believe it was 1991 or 92 in the States, but they still would do smoking on international flights. And I just happened to like the flight attendants that smoked. For some reason, they were like the cooler people to hang out with. I didn't smoke, but I would start doing international just to hang out with those people.
I even still remember when I'd go to like a restaurant or something. And when you go and like, hey, is there, you know, any tables? I'll take smoking or non-smoking.
Yeah, right.
And I thought that because I was just like, I didn't smoke.
First. Yeah,
it's just
available.
Whatever first, but I'm not super picky about it. But I mean, I remember that like almost seems like not too long ago.
It wasn't that long ago.
Yeah, okay.
Pittsburgh, so, not that long ago at all when I go back to visit. I mean, now it's all no smoking, but for a long time. Yeah. Or you would, you know.
You were doing it in middle school, right?
Smoking. We had smoking areas in our high school. Yeah. Lunchtime, you could get a signature from your parent that would allow you, Christy can go out to the smoking area today. There was smoke breaks.
If you had cool parents.
Well, now everybody. It was a silly time. Really silly.
I used to, and I've talked about this, and maybe I don't know where, I'm probably on Ghost Town talking about family stuff, but with Rebecca, I remember going and buying cigarettes for my mother as a kid. She would send me into the store out of the station wagon, and I mean at like 8, 10, 11, and I would go in, and they would not. It's like they knew it wasn't for me, but now you could not sell a pack of cigarettes to a 9-year-old.
They just didn't have the information, I guess.
Yeah. I was just like, this is a terrible idea. Why are you allowing me to? It was like, I could have been, I don't know, I could have like started a business or something.
I always laugh the way we used to lay out in the sun. We would literally lay on silver blankets to have the sun bake us. Like literally, you're getting blisters on your face.
Worth it, though.
I remember, like, peeling days later, and then just, like, a whole layer of freckles would appear. It was like, shit. We just didn't...
That's Schittsburg, though, for you. You know what I mean?
Well, first of all, there's only 60 days of sun a year.
Yeah.
And they've already had 42, and it's February.
You got to cash in. So, you have Storyworthy. That's storyworthypodcast.com.
Yeah,
I can find that.
Apple Podcasts.
And really, I mean, how many episodes do you have of that?
540 or 542.
They're not, are they all on iTunes?
They're all on Apple Podcasts. I think Apple Podcasts only goes to 300, though.
So that's why I was looking back.
I don't think they're all there. No, I don't think they're all there.
But they exist.
They exist. From 2010, the first episode was July 10th. 2010 was Sharon Houston. She was my first guest.
Do you have I'm just jumping around. Do you have episodes that for some reason, that are not current, that still get like a lot of listens for some reason?
I had an interview with Sugar Ray Leonard.
Oh, okay.
That gets a lot of hits. Yeah. That was 2014.
Yeah.
Yeah, Ray, you know, and he's such a good guy. He just wrote to me, or not wrote to me, I wrote to him because I'm seeing this guy who happened to really love him in the 70s, and I told him, I said, you know, I know him. You know, I worked with him, and he didn't believe me. I said, I swear to God. And so I wrote to Ray, and he sent me a video of himself saying, hey, the guy's name. This is Ray Leonard. I'm a friend of Christine Blackburn's, and she is a lovely young lady.
So is he living in Los Angeles?
Yeah, he lives right over there in Brentwood.
Oh, anyway, okay.
Or the Palisades right there.
Yeah, of course.
But the point is he left that message for me to send to my friend. I sent it to my friend, and he's like, no way.
Because I guess in theory, like, you have so many episodes, you don't know what people might find somewhere. I've searched for things. I search for interviews for like, certain celebrities or noteworthy. And, you know, and there might be an episode from 2013 on somebody's podcast. So I guess you never really know what people are finding. Now, Screwed Up Stories is not out as we're speaking.
No, it is out.
Oh, it's out.
It came out December 17th.
Okay. Yeah, that's my thought.
We have about 6 or 7 episodes out, me and Rachel O'Brien. And basically, like I said, we're talking to different generations of women and hearing their screwed up stories. And we commiserate and we laugh and we laugh some more and we laugh some more, and we're out in 32 minutes.
Who is there a topic or?
Any screwed up story. True. Okay. A true 10-minute screwed up story. So people bring whatever they want to talk about. You know, it could be serious, like a drug addiction or an eating disorder. Or it can be a silly story. It's all over the board. But it's just screwed up. And we all have those stories. So it's nice to commiserate.
And you can find that
on Apple Podcasts or screwedupstories.com.
Yeah. And then now you're solo shows. It used to be like one-man show, one-woman show, right? That's done.
You have to say solo, I think, is the new word.
Yeah. Because I think there's like a connotation. It's like a little punchline of like, oh, I got to see your one-man show.
I know. It's so true. And so many have to do with cancer. So like, I don't even say that, even though I kind of cancer, but I couldn't help it, you know. But I try so hard not to focus on that, because so many of the stories are the same, you know. It's like, I was healthy and I did these really fun things, and then I got super sick, and look at me, I'm healthy again.
So what would, because, you know, I say, watch, you know, some stand-up specials that could almost be like, they're very storytelling based, a little bit.
Sure.
Is there like an element of where people can watch and they're like, oh, I feel like a little bit like I'm watching some kind of stand-up?
I hope so. Boy, I sure would be flattered if that were the case.
Yeah.
Sometimes I used to do stand-up comedy for years, and I'm trying to get back into it, actually. But one time I took my script, and just for fun, I knocked out every, you know, I made a copy of it. Now I'm on a new document, and I took out every line that wasn't a joke. It was a thin script. No, it wasn't that script.
Right.
But that is, I think, the ultimate goal. You know, you watch a Patton Oswalt special, and he's telling stories, but he's getting these major laughs. Even Hannah Gadsby last year, telling a great story, but she's hitting these major laughs, and that's the trajectory. That's obviously where I want to get to. I mean, but it just takes, in my experience, a tremendous amount of time and rehearsing and trying.
But time kind of helps, you know, because the more time passes, the more, in a sense, like, you're bringing more story to yourself to put out there. So
you're bringing more courage to yourself because you're getting more of a fuck off attitude because you're getting older. And we know that this last chapter in our lives is the shortest chapter.
Sure.
So at least in my experience, you know, if I see the finish line, I'm going to speed up. Yeah. I'm not going to slow down.
Right. No, I like that. That's good.
Thanks,
and
Jason.
So where is that? Give some details on that show.
Okay, Solo Fest, it's at the Whitefire Theater in Sherman Oaks. So if you're in Los Angeles, February 16th, bring your honey, your sweetie, whoever you're dating to the show for Valentine's Day, Saturday, February 16th.
Okay.
I guarantee it's going to be a blast. Starts at 8 o'clock. It's a $20 ticket with a reception afterward. The show starts at 8. It's over at 9:15. Very nice hour, 15-minute show, and then we have wine and we chat and you leave and everybody's happy.
Yeah. I mean, that's the goal, for everyone to be happy.
ChristineBlackburn.com.
You guarantee that everyone will be happy. Great. That's here.
I swear to God.
And ChristineBlackburn.com?
That's it.
All right.
Thanks, Jason.
Thank you.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Prescription products require completion of an online medication consultation with an independent healthcare provider through the LifeMD platform and are only available if prescribed. Subscription required. Individual results may vary. Additional restrictions apply at LifeMD.com. Read all warnings before using GLP-1s. Side effects may include a risk of thyroid C-cell tumors. Do not use GLP-1s if you or your family have a history of thyroid cancer.
If you've struggled for years to lose weight and have given up hope, did you know you can now access GLP-1 prescription medications through LifeMD? LifeMD is now offering eligible patients online access to GLP-1s, the breakthrough prescription medication that can help you lose body fat and weight. Listen to what people are saying.
You just take your shot. It doesn't feel like you're on a diet. What I wasn't expecting it to do was to shut off the food noise. This was life-altering, and if I can do it, I feel like anybody can do it.
And here's the best part. Your insurance may cover 100% of the cost of your medication. So go to TryLifeMD.com to have your eligibility checked right now. Get started today at TryLifeMD.com. That's TryLifeMD.com.